She looked out at a bonfire. There, surrounded by a bloodthirsty mob, her own teeth having been pulled out one by one, now littering the ground around her, this creaky, cranky, old deacon came to a decision. No one should have the pleasure of throwing her into the fire. So, pretending to need some extra time to ponder apostasy, Apollonia took advantage of a gap in the crowd and threw herself on the flames. Thus did Apollonia, follower of Jesus in 249 AD, fail mightily at efficient ministry and win her place in the great cloud of witnesses. There is this snarky painting of Apollonia by Francisco de Zurbarán, in which Apollonia is looking back at the viewer from her profile, one hand casually in a pocket, the other holding up pincers with a tooth in its grip. About 18 centuries too soon, Apollonia has perfected in this painting what 21st century youths and youth pretenders comprehend in the word side eye. She looks back at us, playful, defiant, as if to say, "You coming?" If it's unclear from my indulgent detail, I love Saint Apollonia. And I've been thinking about her a lot this week as I read our text from Jeremiah today. Because both of them, Apollonia with her body and Jeremiah with his speech and sign acts, reveal something so good for us to consider today. The ministry of witness requires a different posture. Ministry of witness requires a different posture. In today's reading from Jeremiah, we hear a joyful, a hope-filled proclamation of God's faithfulness. "The days are surely coming," he says, "when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with Judah. This the word of the Lord." And continuing with his description of this covenant, Jeremiah proclaims, "There will no longer be need for teaching, because all of Israel will know the Lord." This word is a gospel message to God's chosen people, Israel. It is a gospel message, but its timing is a real kicker. See, it is not proclaimed when Israel enters the promised land. It is not proclaimed at the completion of Solomon's temple. No, this gospel message is proclaimed to a people under siege. A people who can look out their window and literally see the hordes of Babylon surrounding Jerusalem. It is in this context that good news comes to Israel. Now, I'm glad that the lectionary gave us this much. But we need more, because the text drops off today just as the story is getting good. See, right after Jeremiah proclaims these words from God, and as the Babylonian invaders are approaching the gates of Jerusalem, Jeremiah goes out and does something God has invited him to do. He buys a parcel of land, a few acres, proclaiming to anyone who will listen to him that houses and vineyards and fields will once again be bought in this land. He buys property right before he is kicked out of Jerusalem. He is kicked out, and he will never go back. Like Moses, Jeremiah dies before seeing the thing toward which his actions bear witness. And yet he does it. He does it to signal to his fellow Israelites that God will remember this covenant with Israel. that God will bring Israel back from exile, that God will inscribe His law on their hearts and relate with Israel as an entire people who know their God. I can almost imagine Jeremiah walking from wherever one bought land at that time, let's call it the realtor's office, twirling the gate keys around his index finger. I can imagine Jeremiah's eyes locking the eyes of a neighbor, someone who's had to put up with Jeremiah's long excursus on Israel's impending destruction they now are facing. And in that moment, I can see Jeremiah adopting that daring, playful posture of Apollonia, one hand in a pocket, the other holding up the keys to land he will never inhabit, with a stare that conveys at once the absurdity and the seriousness of what he's done. Because, see, the ministry of witness requires a different posture. It's the posture of a martyr. Now, that's my cheap parlor trick for this sermon. Witness is just the English translation of the word martyr. And before our minds get swept away in a thousand directions about gory deaths and gladiator rings, remember that a martyr is just a witness. But not a witness to what has been, a witness to what will be. And it's that posture, witnessing to what will be. It's a different posture because it manifests a certain indifference toward supposed failure or inefficiencies in the present moment. It's not concerned with gaining or regaining the public square with a cohesive branding strategy or for maximum reach. It's not ultimately concerned with productivity of any sort, be it of goods, of human capital, or even converts in the usual sense. Efficient conversion of strategy to numbers is not really the realm of witness. Now, the primary metric of witness is faithfulness. Faithfulness to that which will be. And that, my friends, requires quite a different posture indeed. Witnessing to what will be requires the posture of humility. It admits that we are not, nor are we called to be, in control of the strategies that too often misshape our world. The posture of witness understands, like Gandalf before the One Ring, that none can wield such an inherently unwieldy thing. And so rather than seeking to gain control, the witness speaks and acts a vision of the future. A vision that, let's be honest, looks really silly. It annoys other people. Its uselessness produces rage among some. And just as it starts to sound as if this witnessing, dare I say, martyrdom, is pathetic or pointless, we discover that it is precisely in the posture of humility that witness gets its boldness. See, witnessing of the sort that Apollonia and Jeremiah practice with its indifference to success, it makes room for play and for wit and panache. It's a posture that can hear the instructions, take nothing for your journey, no bread, no staff, no bag, no money, and hit the road. It's a posture that fueled St. Lawrence's very dry, somewhat morbid sense of humor. St. Lawrence, who, when put upon another hot fire to die, this time atop a grill, suggested after a few seconds that he be turned over because, in his words, the first side was already done. And in its own way, The way station was a good reminder of this. We were never going to fix homelessness by feeding people. And even as we pursued housing of the homeless and mental health treatment and identification support, the witness of our common labor was not first the social services that we offered, important as they are and were. No, the witness was the foretaste of the heavenly banquet that we shared, a banquet in which all of God's creatures will feast together, will share with each other, and find in a stranger of a different skin color or class or ability our long lost, our long missed, and our long needed brother. And however God calls Palmer in its next identity here in Houston, this is an important thing to remember. Whatever it will be a ministry of witness. Of course, each of us wants this world to be better, but we know that it is God alone who can accomplish it. And so the shape of our involvement in making this world better is the posture of witness to what will be when God comes. Now, there's a danger in this. It's the danger that the futility of witness in the face of a world gone wrong can produce sloth or despair or defeat or lust of power. The ineffectiveness of it all can just be too much, so we either check out or lean in. I think either way, losing ourselves. And so, to borrow another sermon parlor trick, it is not coincidental that we gather here to remember, to regroup in Jesus' flesh at a meal which proclaims that God has made a way for this world through Jesus, trampling down the one thing that stands in our way, death. We gather here at, frankly, an inefficient and somewhat foolhardy meal, where despite the renewing dysfunction and evil that ricochets in our world, we proclaim that God has got this world with the love of a parent. And then we are sent out, not to fix this world, but to live in it as witnesses to what will be. And so we walk out of classrooms, all the while knowing that our society will not stop breeding violence. We give money to a homeless stranger, even if we suspect it may fuel bad habits. We pursue fair housing and fair wages, admitting all the while that capital knows no virtue. And we do it with Apollonia's wit, with Jeremiah's courage, and with Jesus' delight in this beloved world, because we too, here at this meal, see what will be. Amen.